Good evening. I'm Bless Bobby, and I am an alcoholic. Amen. Let's get the numbers out of the way so you can judge accordingly. I got sober in the 1900s. I have 18 days, 3 months, and 37 years, May 12th, 1987, and I'm 70 years old, and I'm looking good tonight. You know, High Desert Bigfoot Group, give yourself a hand. This is cool. And while we're doing that, let's thank William. William, you rocked it. You know, I love doing this. I want to thank Mark for asking me to come out. I want to thank William for riding up here. I want to thank my sponsor, Louie, and Corey, his wife, Corey, and Albert. I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. He got sober Monday. And he said, I'm going to get sober Monday and go to a meeting Friday night. I mean, how does that happen? You know, there's two things that I like to read before I start this. Here's one. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for 4 reasons. Number 1, it's a sense of duty. 2, it's a pleasure. 3, because in so doing, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And number 4, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And I believe that with all my heart. And I like saying, with all the desperation of the drowning man, the flimsy reed turns out to be the powerful and loving hand of God, which gives me a new way of life and a design for living. I have a design for living today that is absolutely incredible. To be my age, to be retired, you know, I spent 39 years, 83,196 hours in the film industry. And when I was going to my car and I saw Doug Taylor there, it was a gift from God to be able to see him, because I used to work with him at Color by Deluxe in Hollywood in a film lab. And we were talking about before this meeting, I don't care what kind of business you're in, every business they drink. And in the film lab, when I started that in 1974, I was 20 years old on Lancashire. We would go on the parking structure in Universal Amphitheater. Universal Amphitheater was right over here, and they put a roof on it, and now they close it. I think it's a Harry Potter ride or something. But anyway, we'd go there, and we'd drink beer in the parking lot, and you could see the smoke from the weed coming up Universal Amphitheater. I sold weed. I don't like weed. I like accelerants. You know, I like drinking. And Bill Wilson called them high-powered sedatives. I call it high-powered sedatives. And it's like the drugs I did rhyme with tank. You know, cramp. But anyway, you know, that was a way of life for me. And on Wednesday nights, every Wednesday night, I go to, I'm not a member of the Pacific Group, but I'm a regular attendee. And when we show up at 6 o'clock and I cross that street on Culver and Overland, I look down one signal away to the backstage, and my heart goes out to that block, because I was working the 4 a.m. shift, and I had these 2 daughters that were at St. Genevieve's and Panorama City. I'm not an alcoholic. I start work at 4 a.m. The Lord's Prayer in that era was, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Because I was talking to Doug about this man who passed away years ago from pancreatic cancer. And I used to ride motorcycles there. I've had 7 Harleys since then, but I used to ride motorcycles with him, and he was a hang around from the West Valley, red and white. And he used to sell it, and I used to sell it for him. And we'd go to that bar at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm not an alcoholic, so I didn't drink beer, because I have rules. I would have a Bloody Mary. So I'm showing up at 4 a.m. I'm doing that high-powered sedative. At 7 o'clock, when I get my first break, I have a Bloody Mary. At 9 o'clock, I could have a beer. And then we get a break from 12 to 12:30. I punch out at 12:30. I had 2 kids at St. Genevieve's, right up the 405 off Roscoe. I had to pick them up at 2:20. I take a drink. The drink takes a drink. At the bottom of my drink is a vial of high-powered sedatives. And I got caught in that paper, rock, scissors thing that I swore I would never do, because in that era, it was like, even when I was working with Doug, you know, when I left that film lab in 2013, it was like, it was on night shift. It was pretty crazy, because some people would be, you would have your beer drinkers, you could see the pot smokers with the smoke coming out. There was this one guy, I was telling these guys about it. He would be in the front of this little S10 pickup, and he would put the stuff on the sides, and he'd be in there torching up. And I probably shouldn't have did this, but I love messing with people when they're loaded. And I'd go up there and pound on the window and ask them, what are you doing? And they're welding, because you see it spark up. And then it was incredible. It was just like, you know, the era when I came up with, you know, my sponsor, Louis here, he got sober in June 26, 71. I graduated high school. I'm the class of 71 also, because I'm old. I have OLD. I graduated high school in 1971. And that was, you know, I was explaining that to my daughter today, you know, for you pot smokers. I asked her, I said, how do they sell weed now? And because I told her in that era, you had a baggie full of weed, and it was that big. And it was called a lid. And that's the era I came from. And some of you people that are shaking your head, you have OLD now also, you know, because the thing about being an Alcoholics Anonymous is that you get people from all walks of life. You get people that, you know, it's like there's a bunch of you. I remember this is the third place I spoke at here, and this is by far the nicest place. You know, you guys just keep getting a nicer and nicer place, and I think it's a direct result of that man. I hadn't seen Mark Coffey in a while, but we ran into each other at a concert. It was Tedeschi Trucks Band and Little Feet. And it's amazing. He asked me, he goes, hey, you haven't been here in a while. Can I give you a date? And I said, if you don't mind, I'd like to give you a date. This is a very symbolic date in my life. My life changed on this weekend in 2017, and I'll get more into that. But before 2017, when I was out there running and gunning, and I at that time I was married with three daughters, and I had that pre-Al-Anon wife that the reason I can honestly say that the reason my three daughters graduated from college, I had absolutely nothing to do with it. It was because of her, and I can't take credit for that, because I was always a fun dad. And I never had that weekend where it's like your weekend, my weekend. I see people have that. I never did that. Because if the lab was open, I was open. And if I wasn't working, I would pick up the kids. And I'm not ashamed of that. That's just the way I was, because I didn't know how not to work. I didn't know how, but that doesn't mean when I went to work, I was sober, but I tried my best, because my father, you know, my mother and father, they're migrants from San Jose. And that's why my mother loves that scene in La Bamba, in the beginning of La Bamba, where they show them in the camp, where they have a tent, and the senoras are there making tortillas, and that's where we came from. My mother and father were from the orchards of San Jose, and as soon as my father graduated high school, he enlisted in the Air Force and got as far away from that orchard as he could, and he was stationed at March Air Force Base in San Jose, and that's where I was born. I mean, in Riverside. March Air Force Base in Riverside. And my grandmother, my domineering grandmother, went down to the March Air Force Base and took me from my mother and father and says, you're not bringing him up on an Air Force Base. So I'm brought up, and I'm a baby. I don't know any of this. Didn't make me an alcoholic. But it was what was weird is that when I was in school and I would see the other kid's mother picking him up, and I'd see this lady's much older than the other one. That was my grandmother. And then I'd see the other kids' sisters, you know, with them, and I would see these two ladies, and that was those were my tias, my aunts. And I see this other kid's brothers, and that was my Uncle Gilbert. And he went off to Vietnam in 1968. He left the orchards from San Jose, driving a tractor and picking, and he went to the jungles of Vietnam, shooting a 50 caliber machine gun from the U.S. Marines, and came home with the heroin habit. And he was a motorcycle enthusiast, He's from San Jose. He would run around with the Gypsy Jokers up north. And it's just like, I have a big history of a mother and father and aunts and uncles. See, in my culture, whether you're marrying them or burying them, we're going to drink. And I like looping in the Irish with us, because the Irish and the Mexicans are the same. You get these big, hardworking families, when I was growing up, and we'd go to the white people's houses and the Mexican houses, they all had pictures of John and Bobby Kennedy. I remember that. You know, they're all Democrats, they're all Catholics, and I didn't want that, but my ex-wife wanted my daughters in Catholic school. So they went to Pavarello, then they went to St. Genevieve's. And we were talking about this earlier. I didn't know anything about God. I just knew that at the end of the month, if I wrote a check to St. Genevieve, that I was okay with Jesus. And I did that every month. And what I would do every year before I got sober, Jessie was only like, she was two when I got sober, and we dropped the big kids up at St. Genevieve's. And I remember the Ash Wednesday before I got sober in 1987. I'm standing up and I'm looking at Jesus hanging up there. And I'm thinking, and I did this for 3 years in a row. I thought, what am I going to give up for Glenn? Because I had three kids in Catholic school, but I never went to church. You know, in fact, my kids didn't go to church. But they went to St. Genevieve's every day. But I'm standing there and I'm looking up and I think, what am I going to give up for Glenn? You got to give up something for Glenn. And I reached into my change pocket just like I am now. And I did the same thing every year for 3 or 4 years. I gave up beer for Lent and just drank wine coolers. And the people that are laughing understand that, because I hated wine coolers. I missed the beer burp. You know, I rode motorcycles, so at night when it was cold for medicinal purposes, you'd have blackberry brandy or peppermint schnapps or peachberry brandy, because everybody I knew, all my relatives, all my friends, it's kind of like today. On my iPhone, everybody in there is sober. But everybody back then, we didn't know anything about sobriety. When I was working at that film lab, and I'm a shift boss there, and they would give me, I'd go in there and get the list of guys. We would always have guys that would disappear. And I'd say, what happened to this guy? He's in rehab. Oh, okay. What happened to this guy? And this is years of this. They, motion picture would put you in a rehab. And a lot of times, more times than not, I would see these guys come back to work and nothing changed. They were still drinking. It would be like in our era when we were coming up, we would drink on the job. We would have beers on our machines. We're running these developers, and the only rules there was take out your empties. So it was just, it was terrible that we were able to do that. That was again before Mothers Against Drunk Drivers and all that. It was just, a different era. And it's like, I'm selling, in that era, I'm selling cocaine, and I got these guys coming over to my house. My kids are little. And when Jessie was a baby, we had that little monitor where you could hear her breathing in her bedroom. So when she was bigger, I would put it in the center of the living room. And I'm in there tweaking and geeking and drinking and snorting crank and bagging up quarters, halves, and grams. I get an ounce of blow. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but this is a part of my story. I get an ounce of blow, put in 4 grams of vitamin B and inositol, step on it like a buffalo, and then sell. And these men would come to my house and they would always say, Dad, you have a lot of friends that come over, but how come they don't stay long? You know, because it was a drug house. And it's like, I remember when my friend got busted and his wife called me about 2 a.m. and said, Alex just got busted. And, you know, he had a tally sheet. My name was on it. I stayed up the rest of the night. I sent my money to my mother-in-law's house. I take what contraband I had. I'm not flushing nothing down the toilet. I went to the side of the house and buried it in a plastic box. And that was ugly. That was the way I lived. And it's like, I didn't know anybody that got sober. It's just terrible. Other than seeing the guys that would show up at work. And maybe one of them, this one guy, Dan Baylor, because what happened to me is that I'm not living at home. It's Mother's Day weekend, 1987. I'm not drinking. I'm just drinking wine coolers. And I went to my house that week. And my kids, they're Catholic school kids. So Easter Sunday, the Catholic school kids are off the following week. And this is pre-Al-Anon. My ex-wife's making the kids, because the kids were only 2, 8, and 10, then Chrissy, Bobby, and Jesse. One was born November 22nd, 1976, August 13, 1978, and July 29, 1984. I don't know how old they are, I just know when they were born. Because that changes every year, their dates don't. So anyway, it's a night before, it's Easter Eve. And I'm dying for a beer, so I'm in the front yard. It's 11:30. I'm cutting lemons off the tree. I'm slicing them. My future ex-wife is making the. We talk about this all the time. She's making the Easter baskets for the kids, and she buys me a case of Corona. And at 12 o'clock, it's on. I take my kids camping that Monday. We go. We borrowed our dad's motorhome. We go to Carpinteria. We spend the week in Carpinteria. I come back. I parked the motorhome in the front yard. I didn't clean it out. I packed a bag and I moved out. And I went on my last run until May of 1987. And what happened to me is that I'm living in Culver City, across the street from work, with someone I'm not supposed to be living with. I'm drinking every day at work. There was something happened inside of me that my friend John Mendoza says, let us love you till you can love yourself. And I'm that guy. I'm that guy that says, with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you, Albert, I beg of you with all my heart to be fearless and thorough from the very start. But some of us try to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And then the most powerful word in the big book is the next word. And that's what happens to a lot of us. It says, remember. It says, remember, we deal with alcohol, cutting, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. And where's the help? The help's right here. I drink, we recover. First word of the first step is we. I drink, we recover. Remember, we deal with alcohol. And there's so many things in this big book. You know, a good friend of Louis, who I never liked, Don Crandall, used to call this the Book of Secrets. And I believe that. A lot of people have this and they don't know what's in it. And I'm going to be honest with you. A couple years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I read it for years. I looked up impunity. And impunity, when you see others drinking with impunity, and that means exemption from loss or punishment. And I wasn't one of those guys that say, oh, look at the time, I have to go home. You know, I was one of those guys. That's why I like showing. Me and William left at 4:30 to get out here. We're not going to be late. I'm not going to look at Mark and he's going to look at me, but, you know, you're late. We had dinner. We had dinner with these guys. You know, I'm one of those guys that I do not believe in a slip. If you slip where it says sobriety lost its priority, just tell the truth. Just say the truth. You wanted to drink more than you wanted to get sober. And I have a hard time. And that's why Louis gets me by the ear. Not really, but he says, the road of a slipper is a hard road to be on. Because I didn't drink when I took the seemingly bad with the seemingly good. And I see these people come in, and when I have my panels, we're going to start my panels again. The first Tuesday of the month, I'm in Salvation Army, Pasadena. The second Tuesday of the month, I'm in Los Encinas. And I've had those since, you know, 3 or 4 years before COVID. And I take William there, and I say, William, go get him. And that's why William's able to come here and share his experience, strength, and hope with you. Because this is a life and death disease. It, you know, some people say it's not a disease, it's a disease where it's like, you know, it's terrible. It's terrible. Nobody's walked through that door and said, "Bobby, we got this new kind of crank. You'll be able to sleep at night." It just hasn't happened yet. Because then I would say, "You can sleep?" You know, but it's like, because I'm a tweaker, man. I'm one of those guys that, you know, I'm not a get-up hangover guy. I'm the still-up guy, you know. And that's why I get a kick out of people to say, "We would party." I drank every day. When that bar opened at 7, I go there. I drank every day. I did not know how not to drink. And what happened is I went to this, it was Mother's Day weekend. I went back to my house after a long run. I told my future ex-wife, I told Lori, I said, I don't know what's going on. There's something wrong with me. And drinking doesn't do it. Crank doesn't do it. I was strung out and I couldn't tweak. I got strung out in Valiums and sleeping pills. It was that paper, rock, scissors. I was mixing it. The more you drink, the more crank, the more pills. And I kept, and I always had one in the air, and the wheels are falling off the wagon. And I wound up going into rehab. And I went to a motion picture, probably talked to Doug's mom. She worked there, and they gave me a number for IRAC, Industry Referral Entertainment Assistance Center. I called, and that was Mother's Day, Monday, day after Mother's Day. I went, and I filled out this form equivalent, like, for 20 questions. And I know we're not supposed to cuss here. She reads it, and the only time they call me Robert, my name's Bobby. White guys are called Bob, but I'm Bobby. But it's like, she looked at that, and she says, "Robert, you're a drug addict, and you're an alcoholic." And I said, "And you're a bitch, you don't even know me." And then that sense of ease and comfort came over me, and I sat there, and I looked at her, and I was sad. I'm crying. I said, "I don't know what to do." I said, "Can you send me to rehab in Sequoias and put me underneath the tree and I could do this?" She says, "We don't do that here." She sent me to ASAP in Van Nuys. And I was in there in the era where the NBA had the NBA players there. And I was in there with, I could use his name, Walter Davis. He passed away. And I was in there when I got out a year or two later. And that's why when I take William on the panel and I go to the panels and I tell these new people, I says, "Please, I beg of you, when you go to an AA meeting, identify as an alcoholic. When you go to an NA meeting, identify as an addict." And just to respect that, because I've seen some ugly things in Alcoholics Anonymous, because at Chandler Lodge in that era, I could use his name, he passed away, Mike Finnegan, the keyboard player for Bonnie Raitt, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'm secretary, he's leading it. Mary Tyler Moore's brother, he passed away, John Moore. He gets an argument with Bobby Ross because people were sharing and talk about kicking on a couch. And then another guy did, talked about kicking on a couch. And in that era, which is a cool era, because if you baby him, you bury him, now we got the newcomers union where they say, "Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I know how to be sober. I've been in 8 rehabs. I know how to do this." But it's like in that era, you couldn't do stuff like that. And they were starting to fight, and Orlando Woolridge gets between them. I'm little. I'm sitting next to Mike Finnegan. He's not going out there. He's a keyboard player. He's not punching anybody. But I'm telling you, that's why when I go on my panels and I tell these guys, respect the room you're in. And I love if somebody gets up here and says, "I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict." And it's like saying you're a German Shepherd and a dog too. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're all alcoholic addicts. And God help us when the addicts are running Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I love when the guys say, like Louis talked about this, "I'm a dope fiend. I'm an addict." This book is for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to tell my friend Mike this, because he just started copping to be an alcoholic 3 or 4 years ago. He was a cokehead. I said, just every word when they talk about drinking, change it to snorting. See, I don't have a problem being vocal about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm carrying the flag for AA. I love this. If you don't like Alcoholics Anonymous, there's the door. Because it's like, I'm retired. I've been retired 10 years. I have two pensions. Everything good that's happened to me is because I'm sober. I'm sober. And it's like I got to, you know, I got to stay sober. I didn't get to retire. I got sick in 2013. I was at a bar. There's only one bar in the Valley that plays blues, and it's at Reseda Ventura Boulevard, the Maui Sugar Room. And I'm there, and the music would start, and I'd have to pee. It'd be in the middle of music, I'd have to pee. It would end, I'd have to pee. My girlfriend at the time grabbed me by my arm and stopped me and says, "What are you doing in there?" And I says, "I don't know, I can't stop." And we left that night, and I went to, my compa lives in Oxnard, and we met in Fillmore, and I rode my motorcycle there, and I had a vacation day. It was Labor Day weekend. It was 2013. I had a vacation day that Tuesday, and I couldn't get home. I'm running in and out of the orchard going to the bathroom. And I called Motion Picture. They had me go to the doctor the next day. They did tests. I had an infected bladder and kidney, and I never worked again. I went on disability. And it took me a while to figure out, you know, I have a new employer. I work for God. You know, God is taking care of me. God has always been there. And it's like, what happened is that I got to go to a meeting today. I'm an everyday member. Joe Gomez taught me that. I'm an everyday member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I drank every day. I go to a meeting today, sometimes two a day. So what happened is that before I retired in 2008, I had this little band. It was Little Jesse, the Blues Deluxe Band. I want to be a guitar player. She sang. And they said, "Why did you name it that?" And I said, "Well, her name is Jesse. I work for Deluxe with Doug, and we play blues." And she got to be a good little singer, and then I like to say she kicked me to the curb and joined a real band. And what happened is that we have relatives in San Jose, and she would fly to San Jose, and she met this guy in an airplane. And when they met, they exchanged numbers, and then we were playing a gig in Canoga Park, and Jesse's band was second, and she played a set with us, and we met him. And they started dating, and they moved to Santa Cruz, and she married him. And I got to walk her down the aisle in 2014. And I like reading this. You know, in 2014, when they got married, is like, it was pretty veteran. Since they met in the airport, they had it in Camarillo, where the Confederate or commemorative Air Force is, and they had it on the tarmac, where they rolled out the planes, and it was pretty cool. And when they were living in Santa Cruz, she came down with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. She came down with cancer. And I had just got my money in 2014. I had just got my annuities. And she wanted to go to this place in TJ called the Gerson Institute, where they teach you how to do coffee enemas, and they juice them. And she was able to kick cancer. And then she was able to conceive, and she got pregnant. And when she was 6 months pregnant in 2017, the cancer came back. And I like reading this part here. It says, "There have been some hard times too during these years of sobriety. When I was 5 years sober, their daughter, who drove me to a treatment program, helped me get admitted, disappeared. My AA friends helped me search for her, but she has never been found. Her mother and I raised her three daughters." And I'm reading that, and I thought, I raised three daughters. "I did not have to take a drink or went to lots of meetings to relieve the pain. When I lost a second daughter to cancer a few years ago, I did the same thing. What I've learned," this is for me, "what I've learned is that it doesn't matter what hardships and losses I've endured in sobriety, I have not had to go back to drinking as long as I work the program, keep being of service, and go to meetings. I can keep my spiritual life together and live a decent life." 7 years ago tonight, at three halls ago, I'm speaking here. Louie and Jess Andrade met Rudy, and we were at the same place. And I came, my daughter was in the hospital. She had been in there for 16, 17 days. And that morning, she was at across from the Big A at UC Irvine, that's in Anaheim. I'm sitting on the windowsill, and I'm looking out at Angel Stadium. And I'm saying, "Angel Stadium, if there's angels here, take care of my kid. She's been in here for 13, 14 days. They didn't let me go in the room because you're starting losing her bowel movements, and they kept cleaning her up. when I went in there to sit with her and I'm rubbing her ankles, I said, "Mija, if you don't get up and start walking around, they're not going to let you out of here." And she says, "Dad, I just want to chill." And what happened is I left her, I went home, took me like 2.5 hours to get to Anaheim. They picked me up. They brought me here. They brought me here on a Friday night, 2 ago. Labor Day weekend 2017. I think William got sober in January that year. That May, I took May 12th, we had a party in my backyard. Louis did the opening prayer. I turned 30. I'm 30 years sober. And that Labor Day weekend, that's why when Mark Coffey says, "I'll give you a date," and he says, "Can I take this date?" Because you people are special to me. God is taking care of me and bringing me back to this podium on Labor Day weekend 7 years ago. I spoke here. I was Louis 10 minutes before that. And what happened is that when I went home, my daughter, Chrissy, where I live with now, she's my landlord. I have a guest house in the back. She called me and said, "Jesse's on life support." And I said, "Okay." I took a shower. I was living in San Fernando. I went there and the doctor said, "It's imminent." I don't know what imminent means. I called Louis, "What's imminent mean?" He tells me what imminent means. And it's like we went in there and she was on life support Saturday and Sunday. And we all showed up, we were all sitting around her bed, and she passed away Sunday night about 5 o'clock. And that's why I read that part. And that's why sometimes I don't do good when people go out. I didn't drink when my daughter died. And when I left that night, my girl says, "Where do you want to go?" And I said, "Let's go to the meeting." She lived in Whittier. We went to Montebello, the speaker meeting. And this is the way God works. God's always taking care of me. The speaker didn't show up, so they had us go by time and share. I was a third or fourth. It's about 8:20. I had to go to the podium. My daughter just passed away. I had to go to the podium and say, "At 3 hours and 20 minutes ago, my daughter took her last breath, and I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say, but I have an AA fee, and I want to be with the members of Alcoholics Anonymous." And the people lined up, and they thanked me. And the next day, I told my friend John Blavin, because I go to Valley Club Old Timers Monday at noon, and I went there and I told John, "I'm not going to share. I'm just going to sit and listen." My friend Tom walks up to me and says, "Bobby, will you lead the meeting?" And I'm looking at him. And I'm thinking, my kid just died less than 24 hours ago. And I said, "I'd love to." You know, I'm shaking my head no, and I said, "I'd love to." And I go to the podium and I led that meeting. And that God just put me in the hands of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why when it says, "I beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start," it's like, it's so bitching to be able to be sober. It's so bitching to have the life I have where, like, if you ask me where I'm going today, it's like Sunday morning, I go to Sherman Oaks as an hour speaker meeting. Sunday night, it's a free-for-all. Monday afternoon, I go to a old-timers Valley Club. Monday night, I'm back in Sherman Oaks, a speaker meeting around the corner. Tuesday, Louis named it the round table. We started doing this on Tuesdays, way before COVID. I would go to his house every Tuesday. Hector would come to my house on Thursdays. And then after COVID, we combined it. And I look back, we've been doing it since June of 2021. What we have is a round table big book study for men, Sober Cartel big book study, round table of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what we do? We talk about God. We talk about God, and these are all, and we take a picture. We got the Sober Cartel flag. And you know Zoe, he put Sober Cartel on everything. We got hats, we got mugs. Doug, don't let me leave without giving you a mug. And it's like, and that's what I do. I have a new employer today, and I have to carry the message, because when I had William's time, and everybody says that everybody walked up to him and welcomed them, and nobody welcomed me. I didn't want to be welcome. I didn't have time to be welcome. I went to meetings. I'm working 6-7 days a week. I had maybe 1 or 2 to 3 commitments a week, but I stayed sober. I didn't do then what I do now. Now what I do is I create things for us to do. These guys, these men have been to my house on Thanksgiving. They've been to my house on Christmas and the biggest holiday of the year, the Super Bowl. You know, and we have it in my backyard. Hector made the turkey. And we do this for men to go, a place to go to be sober. And that's why we have the Sober Cartel, because we have Louie, and Craig is 55, and he brought a guy that's 55. And we have Frank Diaz, he's there. And then I'm 37, then Rafa, and then we have, you know, various lengths of sobriety. We get anywhere from 12 to 15 to 16 men. Louis pulled me aside months ago. He says, this thing keeps growing. You're going to need a hall. Well, maybe we will. Because Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well in my life. And that's why I'm a regular attendee at Pacific Group, because I love the structure. And I love, Louis's given me 2 cakes there. I've given 7 cakes there. I've read, I did the 10-minute, I got to see Mark Coffey come and speak, and he brought some of you with him there, because that's a happening meeting. And to be sober, and to be 70 years old, and I've never loved Alcoholics Anonymous more than I have tonight, to be able to be with you guys, to be able to be sober, to be a 70-year-old man, and to be looking good. And if it was... And if I felt any better than this, I'd be playing music in the background with my guitar and playing a little harmonica for you. Because last year when I turned 70, my friend Hector, his band played. He did a set, and then I put together a band, and we played a set, and we kicked butt. And Louis and Corey and Louis's brother Bobby, I got him on video. They're dancing, and it's like, you know, and we just planned it like 2 or 3 weeks before. Just like we planned my 30th birthday party, because we didn't know whether to have it, because Jesse was in the hospital. So now I know that I have to keep going. And that's why some of you, I passed out these little butterflies, because my daughter raised monarch butterflies. She'd come over with this little canvas case, and there'd be these milkweed, and there's some little cocoons. And I thought that was the goofiest thing I ever saw. And now on the side of my house, what do we have? We got milkweed. And, you know, we're raising monarch butterflies. And I found these on Amazon, and I give them out. I give them out when I go places. Because if you're sober here, and whether you've had one date, whether you're new, or you're returnees, and you came in for a tune-up, there's nothing better than the sobriety date you have today. I'm one of those guys, I love saying this, it pisses some people off. I'm one of those guys that have had one sobriety day. 18 days, 3 months, and 37 years. I didn't know. 2 minutes. I didn't know when I was in high school at Pauley, getting ready to graduate in 1971, when I went to see the guidance counselor. And she says, Robert, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, well, when I'm 70, I want to be speaking at the High Desert Big Book Group. Because you don't know how long, nothing's guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. We're leaving tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Zoli's gonna be in Ventura. We're going to the car show. I sold my 66 Impala convertible Super Sport in December with 20s and airbags. I'm cool in there. And now I don't know what I wanna buy. God's gonna direct me. I'm gonna buy something. I sold my motorcycle when Jesse passed away. My daughters didn't want me on them anymore. No more Harleys for me. And it's like, but what's for me is being able to be sober, being able to carry the message to you, being able to look at Albert and say, Albert, I beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. And thank you for letting me share.